Members, we'll go ahead and call the meeting of the Finance and Facilities Subcommittee to order. Cheryl, please get us started by calling the roll. Members, make sure you turn on your microphone for roll call.
Chair Yarborough.
Here.
Representatives Benjamin, Botana.
Here.
Bousada Cabrera, Caruso.
Here.
Chaney.
Here.
Duran. Garrison.
Here.
Hanchovsky.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Morales.
Present.
Persons Malika.
Here.
Salzman. Stevenson.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. Again, good morning, everyone. Members, make sure as we start the meeting, and members of the audience, make sure you silence your cell phones or electronic devices. Members, today we have three bills on our agenda, so we'll get right to those. First, we have House Bill 79, Insurance Coverage for Hearing Aids for Children, by Representatives Brannon and Zika. Good morning, Representatives. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. This is a important day for us. We have a long time coming to get here and are proud to be here. Access to sound is a first order event for a child to develop spoken language, and listening drives literacy. We all know that. The inability to listen affects every aspect of a child's literacy. Untreated pediatric hearing loss costs taxpayers in Florida a minimum of $420,000 in just special education costs per child, and probably well over $1 million over that child's lifetime. Children with appropriate access to sound through hearing aids or even cochlear implants, which are a different device, and competent, credentialed auditory oral services achieves language and literacy skills on par for these kids with hearing peers and allows them to succeed in mainstream classrooms with minimal interventions, typically by or before the first grade. The Florida Legislature, the Department of Health, the Department of Education, Governor DeSantis are all national leaders in caring about children, and especially children with hearing loss, and ensuring access to auditory oral services. However, children must have stronger access to sound to take advantage of those services, and that's why we're here today. Hearing aids for children with hearing loss are medically necessary but are not covered by most insurance. Children with even mild to moderate hearing loss who do not receive needed interventions are often 1 to 4 grade levels behind their hearing peers. Children with unilateral hearing loss are 10 times more likely to fail a grade than their hearing peers. Medically necessary hearing aids gives children the access to learn. An interesting statistic is that 95% of children born deaf are born typically to hearing parents who have no experience with pediatric hearing loss. While hearing loss is difficult for everyone, for adults especially, it is a neurological emergency for a small child. Parents pay health insurance premiums, expecting that medically necessary expenses will often be covered. They are often shocked when they hear and learn that their child has hearing loss, and even shocked again when they realize their insurance company doesn't cover what they often need. This is especially hard on middle-class families. People that are well off can afford it. The poor often are covered by programs like Medicaid. But middle-class families who don't qualify for financial aid and cannot afford the expensive hearing aids, which run sometimes $4,000 to $7,000 per year, can't get the aids that the children need. Without access to sound, which is, if you think about it, a most basic part of life, learning to listen and speak is not an option. And Mr. Chairman, if I could, I would like to allow my prime co-sponsor, Representative Zika, to say a few words, if that's sure. All right.
Yes, sir. Representative Zika, you recognize. Good morning.
Thank you, Representative Brennan. Thank you, Chair Yarbrough, Vice Chair Caruso, Ranking Member, not here, Joseph, and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to present House Bill 79, Insurance Coverage for Hearing Aids for Children. Members, as Representative Brennan said, untreated pediatric hearing loss costs taxpayers in Florida a minimum of $420,000 in special education costs per child and $1 million over the lifetime of the individual. According to the Senate bill analysis, the impact to each Floridian of failure to treat the 461 children addressed by House Bill 79 is almost $461 million, or $21 and some change per citizen in this great state of Florida. The coverage that the subject bill discusses would cost 74 cents per covered life, or just 6 cents per month. This is not a cost, members. This is an investment in the Florida's families. And the subject legislation requires a minimum coverage limit of $3,500 per year within a 24-month period. Members, this is an important legislation for Florida. This is an important legislation for Florida families. And with that, I close. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representatives Brandon and Zika, for explaining the bill. Members, we are now open for questions. Questions on the bill? Questions? Okay, seeing no questions, we have no amendments on the bill, so we'll move into public testimony. First, we have Mary Lynn Cullen, Advocacy Institute for Children, waving in support. Next, we have Zach Hoover with Orlando Health, okay, also waving in support. Karen Mazzola, Florida PTA, waving in support. Did I get that right?
Yes. Wait,
okay, thank you. Not sure who's here and who's not. Teresa Bulger, Florida Coalition for Spoken Language Options, waving in support. Thank you. Terry Fisk, Florida Coalition for Spoken Language Options,
waving in support.
Waving in support, thank you. Knox Fisk, Kids Who Are Deaf. Good morning. You're recognized. Good morning.
I didn't hear what you said.
You're recognized to speak.
Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Knox Fisk. I am 14 years old, and I am profoundly deaf. I have been volunteering to visit the Capitol since I was 5 years old. One thing that I have learned is that there are a lot of you who are very invested in helping kids with hearing loss like me. That is obvious again today because you are here and hearing this bill. I was able to attend an auditory oral program when I was little because of the work of the Florida House and Senate. I want to make sure that kids who are diagnosed today have that same opportunity that I did. To do that, they must have access to sound. Please pass this bill to help children get the hearing aids they need. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us. Next, we have Stephen Nguyen, Florida Society of Hearing Healthcare Professionals. Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Waving in support. Thank you. Liliana Dene, I'm sorry, Liliana Dene Fisher? All right. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
First of all, I would love to say thank you for allowing us to speak. Would you like to tell them your name?
My name is Audrey.
Good morning.
And can you tell me what these are?
Hearing me.
What do they do?
They help me hear.
Cool. Can you tell us an interesting fact about yourself?
I joined the team of gymnastics.
Where?
In Florida.
In Jacksonville?
In Jacksonville.
Oh, cool. And what languages do you speak?
Romanian, Spanish, and English.
Who do you speak Romanian to?
My grandma.
Why?
Because she is from Romania.
Okay. And do you have a message for our legislators today?
Yes. Please vote yes.
Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you for supporting other children like Audrey. We totally identify with the story. We're very thankful for your support. We can only rely on your help and hope that other kids like Audrey do not have to struggle as well as we did. Do you want to say thank you in your languages?
Gracias. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Fisher. Thank you, Audrey. Thank you all for being here today. And we had a card from Audrey Carissa Fisher as well. Thank you. And then is it Alla or Alba Fisher? Alla? She was here too. Okay, we have a record of her attendance too. Waving in full support. We got it. Thank you. Dr. Tina Stern, Florida Academy of Audiologists. Good morning. You're recognized.
Morning. As you know, my name is Tina Stern. I'm an audiologist that works in South Florida with children who have hearing loss. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak here today about this important legislation for hearing aid coverage for children. Hearing aids are vital to any child with hearing loss to learn to listen and speak. Many children, as you heard before, fall behind their normal hearing peers if they do not have access to hearing aids at an early age, shortly after identification, which is very costly in special education services, as you heard before. Many working families that I see on a daily basis struggle to pay for the significant investment it takes to get their child and keep their child hearing. These families pay their insurance premiums and deductibles, and this bill will allow for the coverage they need to obtain hearing aids for their child so they may keep up with and they may catch up with and keep up with their hearing peers. This is a low incidence population. Less than 5,000 children in this state have hearing loss, many of which wear cochlear implants, which are not covered by this bill. I thank you for your consideration of this important legislation today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Stern. We appreciate you being with us today. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That concludes our public testimony. Members, we're now in debate on the bill. Debate on the bill. Representative Tant, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you, gentlemen, for bringing this bill forward. As the parent of an ESE kid from K to 12, I know exactly, you're exactly right about the costs to all of us when we don't address these needs through something as simple as this. And I want to say to the folks who spoke today, the citizens who spoke, thank you for coming today and speaking out on behalf of others and taking your pain and putting it to very good purpose. So thank you for being here with us today and sharing your story. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tant. Vice Chair Caruso, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the sponsors, Representative Branham, Representative Zika, for bringing this great bill. I co-sponsored this bill. I've never been more proud or more honored to sponsor a bill in my life. And this one will go a long way to help certain children, hear, get educated, and be part of, the classroom and on a normal basis. And I also want to thank the kids that came up today. You guys are amazing. I'm so proud of you for coming up and speaking on behalf of all the children with hearing disabilities. And so I want to thank you, too. So obviously we are up on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Representative Salzman, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo, I guess, what everybody else has said. Tina, you've done a great job. I remember our call and I mean, just your energy and enthusiasm trying to get this across the finish line. And I know it seems so hard at times, and you just kept going and you kept pushing for the fight. And in my community and for the last 15 years, I know of, we have to do fundraisers and sponsorships and all this to get these children the hearing that they need. And unfortunately, most of the time, it's well beyond their pre-K readiness, their kindergarten. It's typically too late to get them in a spot where most kids get to start. And so this is certainly a step in the right direction, especially it doesn't go unnoticed that this is happening during the legislative session of the body that has been the biggest champions of early learning in Florida's history. And this certainly is a huge, huge impact on early learning. So I just want to say thank you so much. It's so appreciated, the work that you guys are doing on this legislation and the lives that you're going to change.
Thank you. Next, Representative Koster in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you guys for bringing this bill. I had the absolute pleasure of meeting Audrey in my office a couple weeks ago, and she was such a bright spot in my week. And it's just so incredible what these resources have done for her and her family. And, you know, this is a small population of children that we're going to impact, but it's such a huge impact, and it's so incredibly important. And I with a lot of issues that we deal with in this body, there's a couple reasons for doing things. One, it's the right thing to do, and then also there's a business case. This is both of those. This is the right thing to do for these children, but the cost on the front end is so much less than the cost on the back end. And so, we lose sight of that sometimes, and I think that that's really important to think about. And I'm so excited to support this. And thank you to the young man that also came and shared his story with us. I know that you're incredibly brave, and we love hearing from you. So don't give up the good fight. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Additional members wishing to debate? Any additional debate? Okay. Seeing no additional debate, Representative Brannon and Zico, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really don't have a close, but I think I want to tell a story. It's about a little boy who was born, and I guess at about 6 months old, he was diagnosed as being hard of hearing, later found out to be profoundly deaf, had no real what we call residual hearing. But he got cochlear implants at about age five, because there are differences between hearing aids and cochlear implants. And that was the route that was best for him. And cochlear implants were relatively new, coming online. Insurance didn't cover them back in those days. His parents were fortunate that they worked for county government. His mother was a school principal. His dad was a county employee. I don't usually do this. But an insurance broker intervened, and on behalf of the folks, he was able to get the surgery, about $100,000 surgery, I guess. As a little kid, he used to come up here. He'd stand on a stool. He'd testify. And finally, we won that battle. That probably was my first exposure to the legislature. And he got mainstreamed in third grade. He graduated from high school, went to school with his hearing peers, 13th in a class of 260 kids. Went to the University of Florida, graduated with his bachelor's degree. He's two classes away from his master's degree. Last year he was in a program up here called the Gubernatorial Fellows Program. Assigned to the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. When the program was over, there's nine of those students in Florida, mostly graduate law, medical students. The governor asked him, did he want to go work for six more months? And the governor sent him to the Florida's Federal Legislative Affairs Office in Washington. He just got back December 31st. If you've never seen a child hear their mother's voice with those devices are turned off, and this child only got to hear his mother's voice for about 7 years because he lost his mother when he was 12 years old. That's my child. And I don't know where Chase would be today. He was coming. He told me he was on his way. He texts me. He takes after his mother. I don't know where Chase would be. He certainly would be deaf. He may not be able to speak. But he's not going to be a burden on government or society, because he makes his own way. He has never had any special accommodations other than those devices that insurance companies used to wouldn't pay for that he got. And like I say, he would come and do his thing here just like these little kids. And there he is. He's standing outside. He told me he was on his way. I want you to meet him. If you heard Chase speak, you would not know that Chase was deaf. His language is excellent. But when Chase takes those devices off, he is profoundly deaf. And that's why we do it. So if you can take the little kids, and imagine he was little at one time. And this is what happens, what I'm saying. And not because he's mine, but I don't know where Chase would be without his coverage and his cochlear implants. So thank you, Chase, for coming over. He still does a little work for the governor. I won't tell you what he does. But thank you for being here. It means a lot that we did this a long time ago, and this is our first exposure to the legislature. And I'll shut up because I've talked too long. But I usually don't lose my composure, but he's mine, and I'm proud of him.
No apology needed, Representative Brennan. Chase, good to see you again. Thank you.
Perfect timing with that entrance.
Yes, very good timing. Did you have anything to add to the close, Representative Zika? Okay. All right, Representatives Brennan and Zika, having closed on the bill, Cheryl, please call the roll on House Bill 79 and announce the vote.
Representatives Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Bustada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Duran?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Hanchowski?
Yes.
Joseph?
Gratefully, yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Saltzman?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Chair Yarbrough?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. By your action, we will show the bill reported favorably. Thank you. All right, members, next we will have House Bill 1325, Healthcare Cost Savings, by Representative Fernandez-Barquin. Representative Fernandez-Barquin, good morning. You're recognized to present the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. That's a tough act to follow. Ever since I got into the legislature, I've been taking a close look at healthcare. Clearly, healthcare costs are rising. What my bill does is that currently there is a list of shoppable healthcare services that insurance companies can opt into this program to offer a savings plan, basically, for these shoppable healthcare services that individuals can go and shop around these specific healthcare services. What my bill does is that currently the list is roughly, it's not an exactly enumerated list, but in statute it's about 10. What my list does is that it increases it by 500. I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative Fernandez-Barquin, for explaining the bill. Members, we're open for questions. Questions on the bill? Any questions? Okay, seeing no questions, we do have one amendment. Representative Fernandez-Barquin, you're recognized to explain Amendment Barcode 400633.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what my amendment does is just it clarifies that this would be enacted starting with the offering of the 2023 plans.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing no questions, we have no amendments to the amendment. Do we have any public testimony on the amendment? That's on the bill. Okay. So we have no public testimony on the amendment. Members wishing to debate on the amendment. Any debate? Okay. Seeing none, without objection, we will show the amendment adopted. We're now back on the bill as amended. Public testimony. We have Taryn Bragdon, Opportunity Solutions Project. Waiving in support, and I hope I said your name correctly. Waiving in support. Thank you. And that concludes our public testimony and appearance cards. Members wishing to debate on the bill. Any debate? Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that was a tough act to follow, but this arguably may have a larger impact. And it's not about comparing, it's just about doing good wherever you can do it. This bill does good. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional debate. Okay. Seeing none, Representative Fernandez-Barquin, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Representative Joseph. I ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fernandez-Barquin, having closed, Cheryl, please call the roll on House Bill 1325 and announce the vote.
Representatives Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Bustada Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Duran?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Hanchowski?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Morales?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Saltzman?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Chair Yarbrough?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Cheryl. We will show the bill reported favorably as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, members.
Thank you. Our next item, members, is House Bill 1529, Applicability of Payments for Non-Preferred Provider Services, by Representative Snyder. Representative Snyder, recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Yarbrough, Vice Chair Caruso, and Ranking Member Joseph.
Good to see all the members of the committee. First of all, let me start by saying thank you for having Rep. Fernandez-Barkin go after that one and giving me a second because, man, as a parent, I know many of us share that sentiment. That's what it's all about. The Facebook post was dated November 19th, 2013, and read like this. How does a 60% premium increase, maxing out-of-pocket expenses, and reducing coinsurance by 50% make insurance more affordable? I finally got the letter I was dreading. The author of that post had been recently discharged from the Marine Corps, and his family health insurance plan was drastically changing as the ramifications of the Affordable Care Act were setting in around the country. This was not an isolated incident, because the comments I started receiving on that post showed that the reality of the situation was that my wife and I, as we were raising our young daughter, who at the time didn't have $50 extra at the end of each month, living paycheck to paycheck, much less $450, was a situation we were going to have to figure out quickly. Now, I want to be clear, this was not the fault of the insurance companies, this was not the fault of hospitals, and it wasn't the fault of doctors. What was happening was that after countless promises of, if you like your plan, you can keep it, if you like your doctor, you can keep it, we found that those were untrue. And over the last 9 years, we have seen health insurance premiums continue to climb, and quite frankly, members, Floridians are desperate for answers. While most insurance regulation, well, all insurance regulation is extremely complex, and most of it is heavily controlled by the federal government, there are certain avenues and lanes where this body, the Florida legislature, can make a direct impact. While we don't have the power to magically lower monthly premiums, House Bill 1529 is a bill that would require health insurance companies to apply a customer's payment to an out-of-pocket, out-of-network provider to the network provider if the deductible or the amount of the maximum meets the following. The service would have been covered under the policy if performed by an in-network provider, and it is equal to or less than the in-network price. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Snyder, for explaining the bill. Members, we're now open for questions on the bill. Questions. First, Representative Stevenson, and any additional members, let me know, and I'll make sure I have
Thank you, Chair Yarbrough. I appreciate this bill and the goal of more affordable health care. We, one of the things we added to our self-insurance plan this year was an option for shopping for a more affordable, you know, it is actually a little sub-plan where people can look at it. And I learned when I was going through that I was concerned about, well, would they get good, you know, would it be a good provider? Would it be good quality? Because I didn't want them people to shop on price. And I learned that was not as easy as I thought it was from talking to the providers of that plan, that there is some screening and experience and research that I've actually tried to do on my own and not been, you know, very able to. It's very tedious to try to get a sense of, you know, sometimes on the quality side. Does this bill have any provisions for addressing the quality of care?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question, Representative. You know, I certainly recognize the important role that many of our top-tier insurance carriers play in their screening processes and making sure that, you know, only the best physicians are brought into their network. But I also fully recognize that there are multiple plans throughout the state that do have top-tier providers that are not in their network. You know, for instance, here in the state of Florida, we know that the Mayo Clinic, in one of the top medical institutions in our state, is in fact out of network in some plans. And so while I believe insurance companies do have a role to play in quality management, I also believe that the ultimate responsibility falls on the Board of Medicines for the respective practices.
Yep. Can I just
follow up? Go ahead, Representative Stevens.
Thank you. When you look at the plans, don't most of them have an out-of-network option?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, especially in a PPO plan, it's you will see an out-of-network column, and so the consumer does have the ability to go outside of the network. What this bill is saying, that if the consumer finds a service that is equal to or less than that negotiated in-network price, that's actually what I would consider a win-win, because the insurance company is having to pay a lower premium, so there's cost savings there, and there's also now going to be cost savings to the consumer because they're not having to meet two separate out-of-pocket maximums.
One more. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. So this would be my primary concern, is that a procedure could be done maybe more assertively, or it's done on a plan member by who is in the care is not good. The cost of inadequate or maybe not as good a care, the cost would be borne by the plan that they went out of network from. So I think it's a great bill. I just am concerned about the quality element and how that affects the, you know, the agreements and things that they have on the plans. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Next, Representative Tant. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm trying to get to the heart of this. Doesn't this then just upend the entire process of a network? I'm just concerned about when you have a market that comes together to form a network to address a need in any particular community, suddenly, like, it doesn't matter if there's a network. So I'm concerned about that and how that plays into the marketplace.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question, Representative. I do want to be clear. Nothing in this bill prohibits an insurance company from negotiating with a network of physicians and creating their own in-network group. I think the benefit and really the value proposition that the carriers are explaining to the consumer is that we have negotiated the highest value and the highest quality care. However, what we have found is there are numerous examples where that negotiated in-network rate is actually higher than what the out-of-pocket expense would be. And so we want to be very careful that consumers have that option to where if they know of a provider that would best meet their need, they've got that option to seek that out and, again, not be penalized by having to come up with those two separate out-of-pocket maximums, which could be $6,000 to $12,000 apiece.
Okay, thank you. Representative Botana for question.
It was answered already, so I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cheney, you're recognized for question.
Thank you, Chair Yarborough. Thank you, Rep. Snyder, for bringing this bill. I had the same question and concern about quality of care in out-of-network, and I think you addressed that, medical boards. My question comes out of my experience of running a healthcare mobile mammography business when we were denied access to the networks for years, and their rationale was that there were enough mammography providers, although only 30% of women were getting their mammograms and access was a big issue. So my question is, do you have any idea what drives the decision to put a provider in network? Because we were denied just because we were told we don't need any more providers, but that wasn't the case in our situation. So do you know what makes the decision if you're in network or not?
You recognize Rep. Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure that every carrier would have a different set of metrics or decision-making processes, but therein really lies the heart of what we're trying to do in this bill. I've talked to a number of different providers back home who have shared some of that same consternation where one day they are considered an in-network, high-quality provider, and then whether it's through M&A, market trends, the next minute they are now out of network and considered, you know, not that same standard of quality that they had. And so really what we're trying to do is, again, empower insurance companies, negotiate the best rate, compete for the business so consumers know they're going to be receiving the highest quality and the highest value at that network, but also empowering consumers to say, hey, if I can find perhaps an out-of-network provider, even though that would already be covered under the plan, let's go ahead and shift that and give the consumer credit for those out-of-pocket deductible expenses that they're having to pay.
Thank you. Representative Custer, any questions?
My question's been asked and answered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Additional questions, members? Any additional questions? Okay, seeing none, we do have one amendment. Representative Snyder, you are recognized to explain amendment barcode 382245.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're just simply moving the implementation date to January 1st, 2023 to fall in line with the start of the policy year.
Okay, thank you. Representative Snyder, having explained the amendment, members, any questions on this amendment? Questions? Okay. Seeing none, we have no amendments to the amendment or substitute amendments. Any public testimony on the amendment? Seeing none, members wishing to debate on the amendment. Any debate? Okay, hearing none, without objection, we'll show the amendment adopted. So now we're back on the bill as amended. We'll move into public testimony on the bill as amended. We have an appearance card from Adam Basford. Mr. Basford? And it's not on the form, but I assume with AIF, correct? Okay, yes, sir. You're recognized. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Adam Basford with Associated Industries, and thank you for taking the time, and thank you, Representative Snyder. We're going to be continuing to talk about this as we move forward. AIF does have a concern about this bill, and it really has to do with the potential lack of oversight and vetting that can occur with out-of-network providers. You know, those doctors are vetted for the quality when they come inside that plan and come inside that network, and with that higher quality doctor comes a higher quality care. Sometimes the lowest cost service creates more costs in the long run when you get bad service. And so there's a balance here that we need to have. That low quality care can ultimately lead to higher costs for the employers and the employees. And so we want to work to find that balance. But unfortunately, right now, we have to oppose the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, stand by, Mr. Basford. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you were able to propose language to correct that, to strike the balance that you're suggesting. Is there language that would do that, and if so, what?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will have to work on that and get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Benjamin for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Are we saying that lower prices automatically means lower healthcare services? Lower quality healthcare services. So if the prices are low, the care is low. Is that what we're saying?
Mr. Basford, you're recognized.
Yes, sir. I don't have, I can't give you certifiable evidence right now. We can talk about that offline. But I will just say that is just because it's low cost or just because it's high cost doesn't mean it's the best either. So we want to leave it up to the companies to work through that to find and vet the right doctors for their plans.
Thank you, Mr. Yes, sir. Representative Cheney for a question.
Thank you, Chair Yarborough. Yeah. Hi, thank you for coming and speaking. Can you answer the question that I ask the representative sponsoring the bill? Do you know what parameters are used to determine whether a company gets put in network or not? Because what I heard you say is you're looking for quality physicians. But in the case of the company that my husband and I used to own, that was not the reason we were denied network. So do you know what the parameters are for decision-making?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I honestly don't, but I can help you with that. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Basford. Appreciate it. Let's see. Next, Joy Ryan with America's Health Insurance Plans. Ms. Ryan. Ms. Ryan will be followed by, actually, Ms. Ryan, you put in, there's another card for you for Florida Insurance Council.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'll recognize you for both. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. On behalf of our clients, Florida Insurance Council and America's Health Insurance Plans, I rise in opposition to the bill today. Rep. Snyder has been very gracious in meeting with me, and we have agreed to respectively disagree. I wanted to talk a little bit about health plans and managed care. They are complex. Managed care didn't exist in the 1970s. You know, it evolved through the 80s and the 90s through today in response to rising healthcare costs, whether that's providers, facilities, or prescription drugs. I think everyone in this committee is well aware that healthcare is expensive. What managed care attempts to do is to strike that balance to hold costs down for both individuals and employer groups. About 70% of the folks in the country get their care from an employer plan, and premiums go up every year. As you know, they're very expensive. And so what the managed care networks try to do is to recruit quality providers to treat, you know, the enrollees of the health plans at the best price. And what we do when we are looking to get a provider into a health plan's network, the plans credential the providers, which means they look to make sure they went to medical school, that they have a medical license in good standing, and that they've got some experience. Some health plans only contract with board-certified providers, and typically, you know, the boards of medicine do their own certification, but that can mean that they need to be practicing for 5 years before they get into a health plan's network. So we are, you know, I'm similar to the other speakers before me and some of the questions from the panel, cheaper is not always better. And to address Rep. Cheney's question, if I may, you know, unfortunately, the health plans don't need every provider in their network. And in, when we are negotiating, this is negotiation, provider by provider, what we're doing is trying to get the provider to get us to get, we want the best price from the provider, and we're essentially leveraging, it's a contract process between free market parties. The health plan tries to get the best qualified provider and the best price, and the health plan doesn't need all the providers in their network. But there's lots of providers out there, there's lots of facilities, and not every plan has every provider in it, but that is the striking the balance. And to also address some of the quality issues and the questions from the panel, a 50-year-old woman getting a hip replacement maybe can do that outpatient and go home that night and walk up her stairs. But an 85-year-old woman with a broken hip on three different medications may need to spend a few nights in the hospital. And so part of that quality process is to make sure that, you know, the person is getting the right care in the right setting, and you may not want the 85-year-old woman shopping for the cheapest hip person when she needs to, you know, we work with her primary care provider and the specialist that she's working with to make sure she gets the care in the right setting. So that's the basics, and I would be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Question, Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was supposed to be a real easy bill, and then the bill sponsor made some pretty politically charged assertions in the presentation of the bill that I want to just kind of wrap my head around. I believe you heard them tying certain deficiencies with the Affordable Care Act, which I will note, Floridians are the highest participants in the Affordable Care Act. And it has granted lots of people the opportunity to have access to healthcare that did not. Can you explain to me, or help me understand, what, if anything, he said makes sense in relation to the bill, really? Because I don't get it. Just from your perspective in working in this industry.
Ms. Ryan, you're recognized.
What I would say, Rep. Joseph, is that health plans operate in a very tightly regulated environment, both at the federal level and at the state level. Since the Affordable Care Act passed, that act is very prescriptive on the benefits that plans can offer. Everyone knows about the metal levels, you know, from bronze up to platinum, and also in their rates. And so all health plans operating in Florida have to file their rates, the Office of Insurance Regulation, and have them approved. And the standard and statute is the benefits must be reasonable in relation to premium. So the health plans are truly trying to deliver the best bargain for Floridians, whether that's over at state group, whether that's in the Medicaid program, the individual market, or the employer markets. We are, the health plans that I represent are doing their best to deliver, you know, the cheapest but most quality care every day for Floridians.
Representative Cheney, you recognize for a question.
Thank you, Chair Yarbrough, and thank you for attempting to answer my question about how do you choose network providers. What I keep hearing is that you choose them based on their quality of care and that you screen for that, yet the example that I experienced had nothing to do with that. It's appeared to be extremely arbitrary. The information we provided was that only 30% of the women were receiving this life-saving screening, and a lot of the reason for that was they just did not take the time to go to these other providers. Is there any, can you open the black box of how you determine who these providers get to be in your network, and do you offer any kind of process for review once they're denied?
Ms. Ryan, you're recognized.
I believe that there are appellate processes within the plans, and I can't comment on any specific instance or plan and why they didn't. You know, I represent trade associations, not individual health plans, so I can't comment on that instance. But I will tell you that part of the managed care screenings and benchmarks, for example, is to make sure that people are getting their health care, you know, annually of the screenings that are age appropriate, whether it's, you know, a woman getting a mammogram at age 50 for the first time. Primary care providers routinely refer women for those tests. So that is a thing that a managed care plan does, is it looks to make sure that people are meeting their health care benchmarks.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you know where I can get the question answered to get the black box opened of how you truly make a decision of what providers get put into network?
Ms. Ryan.
I'll see if I can get some more general standards. I can't comment on a specific plan, but I'll see if I could get you some general criteria.
Okay. Thank you. Additional questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Ryan,
for being
with us this morning. Final appearance card, Taryn Bragdon with Opportunity Solutions Project, waiving in support, correct? Okay, thank you. Okay, members, that concludes public testimony on the bill as amended. We're now in debate. Members wishing to debate. Representative Duran, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to be up on this bill today. I think it's worth us having a conversation, and I'll preface that by saying that there are some reservations to what we might be doing here. Ever since I've been in the legislature working here, and you and I have been in committees where we have worked through and looked at some of the impacts that some of the moves that the state and the executive branch has done when it came to the rollout and the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, it has had major impacts on premium prices. In fact, because of the market looking as difficult as it was for the insurance companies, they had to raise premiums. They didn't know what was going to happen, particularly because of the levers that we pulled within the legislature and at the executive branch levels during those couple of years. It's a resilient marketplace. State of Florida has led the nation every year since the Affordable Care Act has passed, allowing millions of Floridians to access affordable quality health care for the first time in their lives, many of them being denied because simply they had knee surgery or they had cancer prior to that. And so it is an important marketplace that a lot of Floridians use and access. That said, and when we focus on this issue, we're talking about ensuring consumers, ensuring Floridians aren't smashed in the pocketbook on an unexpected issue. We're talking about healthcare. It's not a question of if, it's a matter of when you have a healthcare issue. And the idea of trying to find solutions is certainly worth the conversation. So to that end, I think it's a good idea for us to move this forward. I am a little concerned because what we will end up seeing is that impact on premiums when we pull levers like this. So it is something that we have to be very mindful of as we make these kinds of moves.
Thank you. Additional debate? Additional debate. Representative Salzman, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to speak on the bill, but I feel like somebody has to say it. You brought a bill to the committee that's being opposed by the insurance companies, and they can't tell us why. They can't explain what is or isn't considered a reasonable included doctor in this network or included service in this network. If it were me and it meant that much, I would come with a little bit more information, and that just tells me how incredibly more important it is for me to vote yes, when the opposition can't even tell me why I should vote no. So thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Additional debate. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair Yarborough. And I just want to say here, because I've been involved in rate setting projects during my CPA years, and actually one of the early PPOs, and when they set rates, it's not, you're buying a rate, you're not buying a la carte. As people would be looking at things a la carte, you're making it's a pricing based on the entire market basket of services and what you would anticipate, you know, if you're a large employer, 500, 1,000. I've sat on boards of self-insurance funds. It's part of the reason that that they're able to get better rates because they know there's a certain amount of business that will go with it. And these are, it's just a kind of hard thing to talk about, and I appreciate what you're saying, that some people get excluded, and that's not, you know, not that that's a desirable outcome, but I just want to say on behalf of people, including self-insurance funds that buy large market baskets of services for a population based on the ages of the people in the population, like a self-insurance fund, like the state in Florida does for their employees, they don't contract on an a la carte basis, and you might find some people that can, you know, drop things off on ones and twos. And I do think quality is also a concern, because when we had that policy option for the state self-insurance fund, it's one of the questions I asked, and I went into great depth on it. And I think it varies provider by provider, and so if we had 10 providers up here, we'd get 10 different answers. So I don't want to say that it's all right or all wrong. I just want to add that to the conversation. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Additional debate? Representative Cheney, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair Yarborough. Thank you, Rep. Snyder, for taking this gorilla on. This is a pretty big conversation. And, you know, I understand the basket of services argument. I've heard that numerous times. What I don't understand is limiting providers, which I think is a disservice to consumers. If I need a knee transplant, or I need a mammogram, or I need a procedure on my liver, I only need one. So if there are 10 providers available to me or 100 providers available to me, the insurance company is setting the rate. And whether they buy it from your local doctor or from a large chain, they have set that rate. And it's not like putting more providers in network is going to allow consumers to go get three knee replacements instead of one, because now there's more providers. So I really don't understand the logic behind that. And I think that limiting access to consumers limits healthcare. So I'm up on your bill.
Additional debate. Ranking member, you're recognized in debate.
I don't even know how to do this, but both Representative Stevenson and Rep. Duran raised some questions that are just raising questions for me about the impact. So I guess I'll ask it in the form to the bill sponsor, to the extent that he has an answer about.
Well, remember, I would just say we're in debate.
No. So this is my debate, like, and I'm asking him if he can
address it in his clothes.
Sure. That's the whole point of what I'm saying right now. So, in doing what we're doing right now, Representative Duran talked about levers that we pull as a legislature, which then have a corresponding impact on premiums. So what I'm extrapolating from what he's saying is that by doing this, we may be making the insurance companies raise the rates, which is counter to what you're trying to accomplish. In the same instance, we've heard concerns about quality, and I didn't see parts of your bill that address quality, because cost and quality don't have to be mutually exclusive, but there needs to be some kind of correlation to ensure not just affordable, but quality care. To the extent that your bill touches on any of that, I would like to know. And if you could further break down your allegations with the, I mean, like, I really don't even understand why you had to bring that up. I'll just say that I find that to be poor form, and it was disappointing. Separate and apart from that, I focus on the bill and the impact on people, regardless of the politics. So if you could address that in your close, I'd be most appreciative.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Any additional debate? Additional debate. Okay, seeing none, Representative Snyder, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members, and the public for the testimony today. Ranking Member, by no means am I trying to take a bipartisan issue and turn it political, but I am simply just calling out the fact that in 2012, the entire monthly premium for my family was under $500. The year before I was elected to the Florida House, we were paying quadruple that, over $1,600 to cover my family. Again, I don't point the finger solely at Affordable Care Act from an intentions perspective, and certainly don't want to diminish from the fact that it has expanded access to those that need it most. But what I would argue is that what has happened is that because of the overregulation that came into effect from Affordable Care Act, how it forced insurance companies to limit profitability and keep it within the margin of insurance premiums, how it forced smaller, lower market providers out of the state has had detrimental impacts on all of our premiums. I mean, I don't think that is deniable. What we're trying to do, again, is say, you know, and I think it's part of the challenge of trying to debate a bill with members who are all very likely on a fantastic health care plan that's paid for by the state. And so I think we need to think through, yes, we are on one of the most reputable insurance plans in the country. Yes, we have an extremely robust network. No, most of us don't find ourselves in a position saying we need to go outside of that network. But networks, as we've had this conversation today, are all a part of negotiations. And so larger companies, by nature of talent, market share, what have you, are able to negotiate a larger network, higher quality, lower rates. But when we go back to the metal levels, your bronze plan that, you know, an individual who's not receiving employer coverage but is forced into the marketplace, I could tell you their network reality is nowhere near what our network reality is. And this notion that, you know, to your point, Representative Cheney, if every high-quality physician was in a network, then we wouldn't have networks in the first place. And so to really bring it back to the essence of this bill, we know that insurance companies must and will continue to negotiate competitive, high-value plans for their consumers. For those individuals that are on plans that don't have as strong of negotiators, they should not be bound to the constraints of a weekly negotiated plan. And so for costs that are above the network negotiated price, those aren't covered. Again, what we're simply saying is that if the consumer finds a service that would have been covered by that in-network physician and finds it at an equal to or lower than rate, that should count towards their deductible and their out-of-pocket maximums. So with that, members, my final close would be just if we look at the bill analysis, what should be the deciding factor for all of us is the closing lines that say the bill will likely allow insureds to reach their deductible and out-of-pocket maximums under a health insurance policy more quickly and lowering out-of-pocket payments for the remainder of the year until the maximum is reached. So we know that the only fiscal impact that this bill will have is saving more Floridians money and allowing them to keep more of their hard-earned paychecks. So with that, I close and hope to have your favorable support.
Representative Snyder, having closed on the bill, Cheryl, please call the roll on House Bill 1529 and announce the vote.
Representatives Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Duran?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Konchofsky?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Morales?
No.
Persons Milica?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yeah.
Chair Yarbrough?
Yes.
17 yeas, one nay.
Thank you, Cheryl. We will show the bill reported favorably as amended. Thank you, Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay, members, that completes the items we have on the agenda today. And let me say I fully anticipate that today was our final subcommittee meeting for this session. I do want to ask our ranking member, Representative Joseph, if you would like to make any closing remarks before we conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say what a pleasure it's been serving on this committee, which each and every one of you, you've brought varied perspectives to the table. We've tackled real issues in a way that has a real impact on Floridians, and I believe mostly for the better. I don't think there's any bill that was disgusting for me in this particular subcommittee. And I really just want to take a moment to acknowledge that. Each and every single person here brought something to the table. Your varied backgrounds, your experiences with the healthcare system, and your just willingness to dig into the bills. I thank the chair for his leadership in this committee. It was very well run, very well, everybody was respectful for the most part, except for today. No, I'm just kidding. But for our committee, you did good. So just want to thank you. It's been an honor to serve with you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Vice Chair Caruso, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too want to thank you for your strong leadership in this committee. It's unsurpassed, and your knowledge of the healthcare arena is overwhelming. And I appreciate your sincerity in trying to help Floridians gain maximum healthcare benefits throughout the state. We've got a lot done. We got a lot done this session. In the last two years, actually, we've worked on modernizing the Medicaid managed care model. We tackled PBMs, and we made healthcare more affordable for all Floridians. So it's been an honor to serve as your vice chair, and I want to thank you again for your leadership.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Far too kind in your remarks. This is a team effort. I want to thank you and the ranking member and all the committee members for your strong engagement in these issues that our vice chair and ranking member have articulated. We have a very important committee, very important in the in healthcare policy space and as it relates to our facilities and to Medicaid and to so many other areas that impact our state and our people out there. So thank you for that and for your attention and your diligence on these issues. Rep. Garrison, thank you with regard to the Medicaid package that you've been so diligent working on. We appreciate your work and other members, too, for the work you've done on your respective bills. So I wanted to thank you for that. I would be remiss if I didn't thank a few other individuals that have worked very hard to make sure that we're not only in proper posture as we officially conduct business in the committee, but also behind the scenes. Their hard work helps us to do our jobs and serve our constituents. Eric Lloyd, our Policy Chief, does an outstanding job, so I wanted to recognize him. Cheryl DeWeese keeps us moving in good order during the committee, and also many things that we don't see. She's our admin lead for Health and Human Services. Tony Guzzo, our analyst. Mike Poche is our committee attorney. Aaron Osborne, our administrative assistant for HHS. Fatou Calixte, if I'm saying her name right, she's our legislative fellow for HHS. And then Nicole Lavallee is our OPS admin. And, of course, Krista Calamus, our all-star staff director for HHS. Just wanted to give a shout-out to them. I don't think any others are in the room besides Cheryl and Eric, but hopefully they're watching and have heard that. So thank you, and it's been a pleasure to work with each of you. Thank you for your leadership. And seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Persons-Mullica moves that we rise. Without objection, we're adjourned. Thank you.